My name's Ellis George, and you are listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
And welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 356. I'm Adam, and bother me now, little toad, and you'll feel an axe in your skull. And here's Debbie Melrose.
Perhaps the wench is crazed, Captain.
Andy Nanny.
Why must I perish first? Bring me wine!
That's a good one. And Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Aye, Master. Yours is indeed a towering intelligence.
Yes, that's correct. We want a quote from the episode, please. We don't actually really want a quote, but we have to do them.
No sleep, practically no food. They're starting to collapse like flies.
I would have, if I had time, I would have just done a transcript of all of Iron Grun's lines, basically, and just done anyway.
I feel a meme coming on.
A what?
A meme where I put together a picture with. Do you remember the time that what was the story, the Sunmakers, when I put together a graphic of all of the ways that the one character, darn, I can't remember the character's name, would be obsequious towards the little guy?
Yes, I know what you mean. I don't remember that, and I'm glad that you didn't do it. Right then, so this week, listener...
But you've given me an idea. I will do it.
Oh, marvellous.
All of Iron Guns.
Oh, no. Debbie, tell me off.
Adam, don't do it.
Thank you, Deb. That's a point for Deb.
Point
for Debbie.
I know Adam won't.
Okay, right. So this week we're going to be looking at the Time Warrior for probably about the 15th time, because there's a few times.
First time for me all the way through.
Yeah, we're talking about Time Warrior, Debbie. Yeah. Talking about Time Warrior, so I don't get confused. Right, so it starts with the brand spanking new title sequence. Uh-huh. The only one of the classic era to only be used for one series. Kirby didn't know that one, but there you go. Although most
does anyone remember one of the DVDs has a documentary on how the guy developed that?
It's probably this
technique.
One, is it not?
Or no,
is it?
No, it's not.
It could be robot. Could be robot.
It's probably robot.
Mm. But this, most of this title sequence was used all the way through to Sharda. It's just the John Pertwee bit that changed. They just the rest of it was all exactly the same. Apart from the TARDIS was added as well, I think. So we start the episode with the fantastic David Dacre doing Iron Grun. And he must have had the time of his life playing this character because I personally had the time of his life watching him. He was
chewing the scenery.
Yes. Yes. No doubt he was advised to do that because this character wouldn't have worked without him chewing the scenery, as you say. He was so sort of Shakespearean, wasn't he, throughout this whole sort of story.
Well, in a comic sort of way, Shakespearean.
Sort of more Blackadder-y sort of way. I mean, it wouldn't have...
I know we're jumping ahead. When June Brown turned up, I straight away thought of Blackadder.
The Wise Woman?
Yes.
Tell me, my lord, what you must know of the Wise Woman. Anyway, right, hang on.
Master.
Yes, come in. Come on. In you come. In. Now.
Stop shaking your ears.
All right.
One. Yes, she is a woman. Two. She is... Wise. Yeah, carry on.
One thing I like is that unlike a lot of the period dramas that use fake chainmail, that is knitted chainmail, that's fabric... they're actually using real chainmail.
Oh, that's interesting, isn't it, Debbie? Fiddling around with their microphone?
It's me. I'm just making myself more comfortable. It's me, actually.
Right, so...
Tom running downstairs that you heard then, though.
So while they're having some of their medieval sort of larks, a star is seen to fall from outside the window. They do wait till the morning. Oh, actually, it's... if you look by the sun position, it's midday before they actually go in. Let me finish the sentence before they actually go out and find the star. Yes, Kirby?
It's a white-painted tennis ball.
All right, yes, fair enough.
On a fishing wire.
Is this a television science fiction series, Kirby, in case you hadn't realised?
Yeah, anyway.
Who all watched this on DVD, and which version did you watch?
I watched it on that thing that shall not be named.
Right, we have 24
hours.
I've got a dog problem. I've got a dog problem I need to attend to. I'm just going to pause this. Talk amongst yourselves about this first opening scene. We're actually talking about Lynx's sort of claiming the planet Earth.
Yes. Go.
Marvin the Martian moment. I claim from the planet Mars. Isn't it lovely?
Yes. I love that the flags came out to the side as well. I thought it was excellent, that was.
You've got flags and then some. No, yeah. I did enjoy that bit.
Debbie.
Do you watch The Big Bang Theory? The World of Flags. I won't be able to you then, Debbie. Sheldon's podcast about flags. I mean, Kirby, you know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Of course.
Yes, I thought of Sheldon straight away and what he would have made of that. Debbie, you must watch Big Bang Theory.
I've got lots.
Oh, it's hilarious.
Magic comes in here and sits next to me quivering, so I'm automatically going to think he's done something in the other room. I don't know what he's done. I can't find what he's done, but I think he has done something. But he's gone back in the other room
Debbie.
Now.
Debbie, I keep trying to ask this. When you watched it on
Dirtling Motion,
when you saw the spacecraft through the window, did it look like a tennis ball, or was it a much more modern-looking thing?
It was a much more modern one.
Okay, so what they have on is the special edition that's available. It's on this DVD that I'm watching.
I watched the original version, Kirby.
You have to turn it on.
Kirby.
Okay. So Kirby, if you're saying it's a tennis ball, that way they're called for new balls then, have they?
Anyway, right, so... So basically, obviously an alien has landed and he immediately sort of takes Iron Grun under his wing. This is Lynx, where he takes Iron Grun under his wing and starts providing them with the modern weapons like guns and stuff. Then we cut back to a very strange setup with the Doctor and the Brig and these sort of little cubicles and scientists are disappearing and stuff like that. Like I say, Iron Grun is making... Lynx is making Iron Grun guns. And they have a sort of strange relationship in which they're both trying to get the upper hand on each other, but unbeknownst to Iron Grun, Lynx has always got the upper hand.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. He's confident that he's going to defeat the Star Warrior.
Yeah.
But so thinking, he's outside his frame of reference. He can't comprehend what Lynx actually is.
No.
So he didn't realise... No way he can realise he's not going to win.
Yeah.
Having said that, I mean, one decent whack from a crossbow or something like that, everybody would have gone down.
In the right place. In the right place, maybe. Yes. I also love, there's a scene where Iron Grun fires the rifle off and his little mate doesn't like the bang and he's holding his ears. Exactly what I think I would have done under the same circumstances, because I used to hate fireworks when I was a kid, because I used to hate the bangs. It was always having my hands over my ears. Me thingy slipped. Then we meet the short-sighted Professor...
Rubbish.
Rubbish, yes.
Yes. Rubbish with an E.
He has a very fetching bow tie. And some
and then we meet
companion. And some stereotypical Bic pens in his pocket as well. And then Lavinia Smith turns out through the door. Good old Lavinia. Looks a bit like Sarah Jane, to be fair. And she doesn't really get on with the Doctor initially. But she's there for a story, because she's a reporter. Do you remember her, that she was like a journalist?
Yes, he said that.
Yeah. Does anybody remember her being a digital journalist? This is for the listeners and watchers of the Facebook group. I'm being facetious because everybody knows Sarah Jane was a journalist. I just wanted to see if they'd actually take the bait on that one. And, of course, I was right. So I'm going to deduct a point from everybody for being really daft, for not seeing the obvious there that Sarah Jane was a journalist and always was and always will be. Well, not always will be because she's obviously no longer with us. But so that was all rubbishness from you.
No, Sarah Jane's still with us. Liz Layden's not with us.
Well, essentially Sarah Jane isn't with us if Liz Layden isn't. But I was trying to be facetious to see if they say, "Oh, don't be silly. Everybody knows she was." No. She was a journalist. Yes, Sarah Jane Smith was a journalist.
Why does some of the scientists get caught out in the main room and some have their own little cubicles?
Are you asking? Sorry, I missed that question because I was letting the dog out. Yeah, sorry.
Why do some scientists have to sleep out on cots in the main room and some have their own cubicles?
Maybe they didn't like each other snoring.
and the TARDIS looks rubbish.
Appalling statement.
That's a bit rubbish.
Biting on it as well.
it looks like it's about to fall apart.
That was a topical comment there.
Yes. Actually, I did some research a while back, and this is the original police box from 1963, and it is not going to last very much longer.
Thank you for that, Kirby.
It is literally falling apart. And also, extra on the disc about making of this. At one point, they were going out to location, and they forgot the TARDIS.
All right.
They had to go back and get it.
Well, there you go.
How could you forget the TARDIS?
These things happen. How many people have gone out of their house and forgot the kids? That's in reference to a Michael McIntyre joke, by the way. Right. So, Michael McIntyre's a comedian, a very good comedian, by the way. So we meet Dot Cotton and, only Mary would understand that. June Brown playing...
I get it.
Yeah, and some other bloke playing another sort of Shakespearean style, essentially king. He's not the king, but he does sort of come across in that way. What's his name again? Sir something or other?
William?
Sir William, is it?
I don't know. Edward.
Sir Edward, yeah, thank you.
You know how to tell a king.
Nice one, Andy. At least he's paying attention.
You know how to tell a king.
No, here we go.
He hasn't got shit all over him.
He hasn't got what? If you swore, then you're going to get a point deducted. I'm glad that was... I think he did swear then. I'm going to put deduct a point, even though he didn't really hear it properly. We meet them.
It was quite a lot of Monty Python in this.
Yes. It was actually, yes.
It really is.
It is very Python-esque. So then they capture one of Sir William? Sir Edward. That was Debbie's fault. I said Sir William. Then they use Lynx to get the truth out of him with his little magic wand.
Ah, so that would be the Lynx effect there, wouldn't it?
And he's on fire today. Yes, very good.
Andy to win.
Do you now? The doctor, meanwhile, is making a machine so that can sort of detect delta waves because he's very fond of delta waves. Yes. Now, if any of you lot had said that, of course, they would have got a point, but as it's me, what can you say? So actually quite a nice little machine he's made there, isn't it? It's very sort of futuristic. It's even got a CD stuck to the top of it.
Machine that goes bing.
I don't think it does though, Debbie.
Kirby already did that.
Actually, it's a Rondian sensor.
A what?
A Rondian sensor.
Is it?
I believe that's what.
You may have said that. Yes. Okay. Don't get any points for that, but well done. So yeah, isn't there the point in which Sarah goes to have a sleep in one of the cubicles, while the doctor decides just to sort of lie with his feet up on his desk, and
presumably Liz Layden or Sarah Jane Smith sleeps fully clothed.
Yeah.
Because she came out.
No, she was just ready. She was ready to go have a sneak around in the middle of the night. That's why she had her clothes on. Oh, right. And then Rubish disappears. And they go out in the hallway, and he shows a little delta wave thing at the top of the stairs, and a ghostly figure of a Sontaran appears. He doesn't recognise it as a Sontaran at this point, but he pats.
Yes, he does.
No, he doesn't.
No, he knows perfectly well.
No, he doesn't. He only knows the Sontaran when he arrives. He sees Lynx and he shakes his head and realises there's a scene in the next episode. Aren't I right, Debbie?
Well, I thought he knew what it was.
Okay, point deducted for Debbie.
That's the opinion I got. I'm sorry.
No, that's wrong, though.
He looked at it and went and worked it out later. That's why.
Yeah, I agree with Andy. Point to Andy. So point to Andy. A point deducted for. Oh shit! I swore myself.
I got a point deducted.
Point given back to Kirby because I swore. And Debbie gets a point deducted.
She's correct.
No, she isn't. Moving on. Right.
We're being punished for having our own opinion.
No, it's not an opinion.
Yes,
it's not an opinion. Debbie. It's being wrong about a fact. It's a fact in the episode. So it's not opinion. Moving on. Right. So, the Doctor packs his stuff away and somehow Sarah Jane sneaks into the TARDIS.
Yeah, we never actually see her do that, do we?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we see. Doctor's talking to the Brigadier, who obviously can't see his two fingers in front of his eyes, because she does rather clearly sneak in behind them. Oh, no, he is not looking in that direction. I let him off. She sort of sneaks up to the TARDIS and goes, Doctor. No, she goes, Rubish, doesn't she? Professor Rubish. Mm-hmm. And then she sneaks in. So, yeah, we see her go in. And then we see Boba Fett.
She was one of the few companions who've gone into the TARDIS and not come out and said, it's bigger on the inside, because she sort of comes out.
Yeah, because she's stowed away, yeah. So yeah. The Doctor arrives and sort of pats the TARDIS because it's actually got him in the right place for once. And and I did notice that he was wearing this green velvet jacket, which completely merged into the green background of the forest or whatever it was they were sort of in at the time. And then we meet Boba Fett. That we're doing
yes.
That.
Yes. Boba Fett. Where? Yeah.
Who we previously saw. We previously saw in the Space Museum, Kirby. Yeah. He's thinking about it. We previously saw in the Space Museum, Kirby.
Yes, we did.
Hey, point to Kirby for agreeing with me. Well done. Right.
I'll get a point back for agreeing with you at some point, then.
Only if it's a genuine agreement, because I was right all along. Yeah, sorry, Kirby. Kirby? Oh, he's not saying anything. I'll move on there, mate. Take the opportunity.
And then we see our first glimpse of a Sontaran outside of his helmet. And besides the hair, which disappeared later on.
It did, yes. Oh, maybe he had a shave later on.
But it's just so wonderful that Sontarans now are basically exactly the same.
Well, they're clones, they would be.
Nice one, Andy.
Except in the two doctors.
Nice one, Andy. That was really good. Right then.
Where the two doctors, Sontarans, are obviously not clones because one's a foot taller than the other.
Okay. Yeah, moving on. Right, Sarah starts looking around and, it's one of those pageant things. It's quite funny. And then when they grab her, she just goes, "Gear off!" Which is really quite funny. And like you say, right at the end of the episode.
I thought that was brilliant.
and like I say, we see them. I think Lynx takes his helmet off and starts poking his tongue out in a very curious way.
Yeah, his tongue starts coming out a lot, doesn't it? Then?
So she gets dragged away by Eingren's men. And then right at the beginning of the episode, the Doctor pokes his... Well, that's because we see this at the end of that episode, don't we? It's peeking through the thing. And of course, Lynx takes his helmet off. The Doctor then realises it's a Sontaran and he shakes his head. That's the point in which he knows it's a Sontaran. So sorry, Debbie.
He knew it was a Sontaran from the beginning.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't. Point deducted for Kirby for doubly being wrong. All right. Right, so...
No, it's a point deducted for disagreeing with Master.
It's not, because it's wrong. He shakes his head, he looks at Lynx, and that's the point in which he realises for certain it's a Sontaran, because previously the Sontaran had his helmet on. He couldn't be absolutely sure it wasn't a Jadoon. It's a Sontaran... Andy, who's right?
You are the course master.
Oh, another point for Andy. Right then. Debbie, who's right? Debbie.
Take the fifth.
Pardon?
I'm taking the fifth.
You're taking the what?
You're British. You can't take the fifth.
What's that mean?
Tough. I'm changing allegiance for this episode.
So, who's right? Debbie.
You have the right to remain silent.
He had a chance then to pick up a point, but spurned it. Right then. So, yeah.
Master.
Yes?
Master. You're right.
Too late. Right. So, yeah, so Sarah Jane still is convinced that this is a bit of a, you know, a reenactment of something or other until they're just about to kill Boba Fett. he does a very dramatic raising his axe because it's a blood axe. So his blood axe is axe. No, his blood axe is axe. That's what he used.
Blood axe is behind him.
Yeah, but he used his blood axe's axe. He was going to chop his head in half, but decided he's not going to because obviously Bubba Fett.
They probably chop his head off.
No, Bubba Fett is hired to the end of the story, so they couldn't really chop his head off at that point. And then that's right. Then Lynx comes in and does the old magic wand thing on Sarah Jane, who does her first bit of possessed acting in Doctor Who. Yeah. Of course, this was going to be a thing, a sort of. It's like a had to happen theme. In most stories. Yes, common theme of the possessed acting fighters. Elizabeth Sullivan.
Let's start a Sarah Jane possessed tally.
If you want
now,
to, Kirby.
Now until Hand of Fear.
If you want to, Kirby, you can do that. So yeah, but, careful, Andy. So then obviously they find out that Sarah is. Thinks the doctor is nicking all these scientists and blah de blah, and then Lynx brings in this really weird looking sort of robot thing that swings an axe and stuff.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Not master. What do you mean, not master?
It's not an axe. It's a sword.
All right, sword. Yeah, pedantic person.
Ding.
No.
Ding.
And they're actually going to chop off Boba Fett's head. They nearly were going to chop it in half just a minute ago, but now they're going to chop it off. But then Iron Groom comes in. No, let's have some sport here and let him have a fight with this robot. And there's
it's
a point
in the control panel thing, and he only twiddles one knob, and that's the only thing he does with this.
Well, yes. But what gets me is the bit where he does a funny little smile when he says, "Right, you can have a fight with this soldier thing," and he does this stupid little smile as he's drawing his sword back. The smug smile, I suppose you'd call it.
And Andy, it's a science fiction TV show.
No.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Really?
The line, Kirby, is science fiction fantasy TV show. Sorry. Right, so the Doctor rescues Boba Fett by shooting the control with a crossbow out of Iron Grun's hand. And it's quite funny when it's lying on the ground kicking and stuff with its head cut off and... Iron Grin is not in
there. Tell your flesh wound.
Yes. And Monty Python quote there from Andy. Well done. And it was very much like that. Because this was only a couple of years after.
I quoted Monty Python earlier.
This is only, yeah, but that was an appropriate quote for the scene.
As soon as he started talking about the night, Kirby, night always triumphs.
Yeah, but that was appropriate for the scene because that was a scene from Holy Grail, and it was.
We all know who Master's teacher's pet is.
No, it was appropriate for the scene. He did it at the right time. It's called timing. Comedy is important, Kirby. It's timing and everything. And he's on form tonight. Right then. So I'd love the way that Iron Grin, when he's sort of giving out his insults and stuff and put me down, so he often uses either word dogs or things like that, and he always sort of compares people to animals of some kind. Obviously, Lynx is a toad. I think the Doctor's a fox. I think the Wily Fox. I think he called the Doctor at one point. I may be wrong. But it's quite interesting that he uses those analogies. The Doctor, meanwhile, sneaks downstairs and meets Rubish, who hasn't got any glasses, so he can't see a blooming thing. Therefore, he hasn't been sort of brainwashed. Yeah, brainwashed by Lynx's equipment. And
it's amazing how Lynx lets Rubish just wander around and do anything and doesn't seem to try to... bring him under control.
Yeah, it's a bit weird that, but then he's maybe sort of doesn't. He's not impressed with human beings anyway. And then he shines a red light in the Doctor's face, which the Doctor doesn't like very much because it makes him wince. Sarah Jane, meanwhile, has made it into Sir Edward's castle to have a chat with Doc Cotton. I mean, June Brown and was it Lady Eleanor? Or something? I can't remember. They start putting together a bit of a plot. I don't know if it's to kidnap the Doctor from the castle or what, but a plot is afoot. Meanwhile, the Doctor himself is being put under some sort of strange contraption to so as he can work on this computer. But if he moves, he gets I don't know if it's electric shock or what, but they often do these.
He got one of Sharda's balls on his head, hadn't he?
I beg your pardon?
He got one of Sharda's balls on his head.
Has he? Oh, yes, oh, yes.
Yeah, it's going
to be it's a baby. A baby Sharda's ball. Not quite as big as that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he does some quite good in pain acting, actually, John Pertwee does, when he gets zapped by the machine. Then Rubish comes along and presses the wrong button. And that hurts as well. And they're like, no, the wrong button. Yeah. Meanwhile, Sarah Jane, the warrior girl, has changed her outfit and heads into the castle. And when the doctor sort of gets away, thanks to Ruby, she's pressing the right button eventually, tries to sneak out, but then gets embroiled in some little battle and then gets rescued. Well, that's the start of the next episode, because obviously Iron Man's about to kill him. But the next episode, he gets rescued by Sarah Jane and her little friends. Because, what? It's more... Not kidnapped. What's the word she used? It wasn't kidnapped. It was...
Yeah, not being rescued, you're being...
I can't remember the word she used.
Captured,
that's the one, yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
oh, yes, because she's still...
No, I want Debbie for getting that one right.
She doesn't trust him, no.
No, all right. So, she doesn't trust him, but it doesn't take long for the doctor whilst he's, you know, in Sir Edward's castle to start, believing him. And then we meet the comedy serving wench woman, which I thought was incredibly amusing. And the hair she had was funny in itself.
She was in the first scene as well, talking about the dregs of the wine.
Yeah, don't remember much from that scene, so I certainly didn't. But it's in these scenes, she's really funny and very Blackadder-ish.
Yes.
And, right, so... Then they, because the doctor's with them now, they dream up a few little ideas to scare scare Iron-Grin's men, like putting up dummies up in the castle.
Would that mean that Iron-Grin's men are also dummies?
Doesn't Sir Edward do all the artwork?
He paints all the faces, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So and they put these up on the.
I made a joke. And
it wasn't very good,
I knew it.
Kirby. That's why.
Because he wasn't funny, that's why.
See, I don't think he understands how jokes work. It's supposed to make people laugh. So the doctor, meanwhile, also makes some little cloth bags full of explosions and, little puffs of smoke.
Saltpeter, sulfur, and something else as well.
Just as Iron-Grin and Lynx turn up to attack the castle, and they start shooting these dummies, and Lynx obviously says they're dummies, not people, and the doctor throws over these exploding things that scare Iron-Grin's men, and they all run back to Iron-Grin's castle, much to the annoyance much to the annoyance of Iron-Grin, who sort of takes some wine and throws it and stomps his feet and calls them dogs and all sorts of things. It's very very amusing. And it's very, he's got this pot of wine and smacks it down on the table. It goes everywhere. And
what a waste of wine.
Yeah, I thought you might think that. And then the doctor and Sarah Jane sneak back into the castle past these rubbish guards.
Rubish is already in the castle.
Yes. And they're wearing, they look like a bit like Jedis as they're going through in their little.
Yeah, they do.
Do you notice that Sarah Jane is actually, when she's in that monk's habit, she's got her serving wench clothes underneath that, and then she's got her Robin Hood clothes on under that.
Yes, yeah, she's in three layers. Yeah.
No, I didn't notice that, but never mind.
We did.
Oh, go on then. I suppose that's worth a point. Great.
Who's? Oh, good.
Both of you, whatever.
Thank you. Thank you, Master.
Right, so there, they get into the castle, but somewhere along the line, of course, Rubish has made himself a little monocle, rather ingeniously, so he can see enough to find a piece of glass and polish it up.
I don't know how I'd cope without glasses.
And that's right.
Would you say he's making a spectacle of himself?
Oh.
So, yeah.
No.
Somewhere along the line.
He doesn't like me.
Lynx has his first little proper confrontation with the Doctor, in which he talks about where he comes from. And for the first time in Doctor Who, we find Gallifrey. That the Doctor comes from Gallifrey. Anybody notice that bit?
Yes.
At least you were watching that bit, which is rather wonderful. And hang on, what happens at the end of that episode? Oh, he's going to. That's right. He shines a red light in the Doctor's face, and that's the end of the episode. Oh, now the dog wants to come back in again. I don't know my life,
does it? Come on, quickly.
I didn't realize the door was that close to the desk there.
What it is.
Right. Well, actually, if you open that door, you see Debbie behind it.
No, she's that way. She's that way. The dogs are that way.
I open your back door. You open your front door then.
Mind you, Deb, I've got a couple of walkie-talkies there. We probably could chat to each other on the walkie-talkies.
Yeah.
Right, so where'd it got up to? Right.
But don't you have telephones on the Isle of Wight then?
No. Okay. It's all tin cans and string.
Shut up.
Well, of course it is, because you're all only about 100 yards away from each other.
Anyway, the Doctor survives because Sarah Jane gets Lynx to point his stick, point dead stick, away from the Doctor. So the Doctor just collapses on the floor and does his exhausted acting and says, "Lynx, I told you," that sort of thing. While Sarah Jane runs off and decides to spend the rest part of the episode as a serving wench. Well, she sneaks in the kitchen to try and get some food for the poor scientists who are dying of malnutrition. But because she's in there, she does get a job. I'm not quite surprised that the serving wench woman sort of hired her so quickly. We're not sort of looking at a CV or anything, but there you go. The Doctor, meanwhile, decides it's a brilliant plan to pretend to be the robot, and comes in and then has a little battle with all the soldiers in there, and eventually... Yeah?
He really is quite poor at it as well, though, isn't he? He's undefensive all the way until suddenly Iron Bond slips, and the next thing you know, he's got his sword in his throat.
Yeah, but as a boy, come on.
He's a pretty unimpressive robot.
Because he gets out his... is it the Strongbow thingy? What they call those things? The Strongbow? Frostbow, that's it. And it's come on. Yeah, this is not really sport, is it? And he said, "Oh, shall I lift up my visor?" Well, you won't like it. Give him like a heart failure or something like that. But and of course, when he does lift up his visor, Iron Grin gets a bit upset. And again, he swings a sword above his head because he's going to. Because I mean, if he hits the Doctor's head at this point, he's got two blokes either side of him. Surely they're going to get chopped at the same time. I don't know. But so yeah, they. Meanwhile, Sarah Jane's
Actually, any of you guys, have any of you been to Peckforton Castle?
Nope.
No. Is that it? Right.
Where is it?
Cheshire.
No.
No.
Right. So Sarah Jane is enjoying
it. Shut up.
Near Manchester.
Never mind. Sarah Jane is enjoying
her. Tells me nothing.
Right. Point deducted.
The north of England.
Point deducted for Kirby and a point deducted for Andy for not giving up on the pointless discussion. Right.
Not pointless. We both lost the point.
Another point deducted for Andy. Right. So Sarah Jane is meanwhile really enjoying her time as a serving wench. Somewhere along the line, all the scientists wake up, even though they're exhausted or whatever, and Rubish is able to tell them to pretend to be possessed. And then Eingrind comes into the thing and they... beg your pardon?
Yeah, that's it, yeah. The polka.
The tune of the beat of the polka is what he's flashing.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Right, and then... That's right. They're going to shoot the Doctor basically with these rifles. Of course, they're so rubbish at shooting they miss the Doctor every time, which is rather like UNIT's abilities of shooting. I thought it's quite ironic.
like the way he just quite sort of very slowly dodges.
Yeah, he does. And then Sarah swings a chandelier at him, and he jumps on the chandelier and sort of swings out of the room and says, thank you very much to Sarah, and then they run across the stereotypical courtyard thing, past the rubbish guards, after the Doctor does a funny little, "Hey, have a look at this," and slaps them in the face. That was quite Monty Pythonish as well, actually. And then Lynx is the Doctor makes an umbrella thing to deflect Lynx's sort of
cask. That's gun kind of thing. A cool little thing.
I thought it was a light shade. I thought it was.
Some sort of photographic equipment, I think, for the time. And then he does something to Lynx's spaceship. Or is it, does he get Rubish to do it? I can't remember now. Somebody does something to Lynx's spaceship.
I think it's Rubish.
Rubish, yeah.
No, he gets something out.
Oh, well, it is the Doctor, yeah. He takes...
He gets something out, yes. He gets that back out because he's not plumbed in, basically.
Yeah, part of a transistor radio out of Lynx's spaceship. So Lynx thinks he can get away. He's one last argument with Irongren. And then they all start fainting because their castle's going to go up. Yes?
When Hal the Archer takes all of their weapons, he puts them so close to them. I mean, that's not really...
I was like, that's very ineffectual. They'll wake up and go, where's my sword? Oh, there it is.
Yeah, maybe he did it for maybe he did it for sport reasons. One on Debbie. Nice one. That's a point for Debbie for comedy reasons. Very good. Right. So the
Master doesn't like me anymore.
When the Doctor has his little obviously, well, we forgot to mention about the being whacked on the back of the neck thing with the Sontarans.
I like the fact that when he goes to get Lynx and he puts the helmet on, the Doctor puts the helmet on to speak like him. He doesn't sound anything like him.
I thought it was totally pointless.
It's like, why did you do that, Doctor?
So, that's right. The Doctor sends back all the scientists, which reminded me a little bit at the end of...
Well, essentially...
The
Doctor sent the first two.
After the Doctor's instructions. It rather reminds me a little bit of the Three Doctors ending.
Yes.
And then I was quite sad that Irongren died in a rather pathetic sort of being shot by a laser way. Really?
But now, how come the serving winches don't get out?
I don't know how.
We never see them leave.
No, we don't. Never mind.
Well, who cares about the women in those days? That's the point, too, in Kirby. No one really cares.
So, Lynx tries to leave,
when was this, Master?
Yes.
When was this supposed to be set? How far back in the Middle Ages?
No idea.
We're talking about the fact the Normans were around.
Yeah, right. about the 11th century, they were there. Yeah.
Because Peckforton Castle is a folly. It was built in the mid-1800s. It's not a real castle.
It looks right.
Right.
Well, any wonderful castle from the Norman age is probably fallen down by now, Kirby, anyway. So, I mean, Nunney Castle got done in by Cromwell. I've actually got a castle, you see.
We've got Carisbrook Castle.
No, but it's not called Debbie Melrose Castle, is it?
No, good grief.
Oh,
I've got my own locomotive as well.
How did you know it's not called Debbie Melrose Castle?
People are going to get points deducted for talking about inappropriate, not inappropriate, but things aren't really related to what we're talking about. Yes, Kirby, quickly.
The Peckforton Castle website mentions the filming of Doctor Who.
Splendid. Thank you for that. Right, so... Lynx is just about to fly off when old Bubba Fett, or whatever his name is, shoots him through the probic vent with an arrow. So even though the spaceship was going to blow up, he was going to be dead anyway because Bubba Fett got him. And
after all.
So because obviously that spaceship blows up, the castle blows up, and the Doctor and Bubba Fett and Sarah Jane... go back to the TARDIS. Bubba Fett could have gone off with the Doctor at this point, but no, he decides to stay back.
It was suggested.
It was suggested that they were seriously thinking of having him be a male companion.
Oh, were they?
Uh-huh.
Oh, well, there you go. Okay, right, this story is fun. There was obviously lots of little naughty little bits of silliness going on, but it's just fun. There's a lot of comedy elements in it, I think, deliberately. David Dacre shines, and I don't know what I said last three or four times we reviewed this story, but
we've only done this one other time.
It's good. I like it. It's not quite as good as last week's, but it's still really, really good, and it's lovely to see Sarah Jane Smith on the screen. We're going to see her for ages more. Isn't it wonderful? Debbie!
Yes!
Yay! I like this one. I laughed a lot in this one. it was funny. It was great to see the dynamics already between the Doctor and Sarah Jane, and it was perfect length, brilliant.
That's what she said.
Brilliant. Yeah, it was and it was basically brilliant. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fantastic Doctor Who, and just brilliant to meet the Sontarans, well, a Sontaran, but fantastic to see them, and just really good Who. I really enjoyed it, and this is one that Isla didn't watch with me, but I'm going to read it with her this week, because she's been too busy, so I hardly saw her, so yeah, she's going to watch this one definitely, for sure, she'll love it.
Sorry, the dog is being a pain. He's pant. I'm going to put him onto bed in a minute. They're annoying me. Right then, Andy, what did you think?
Yeah, again, thoroughly enjoyed it. I think it's. I know I've been moaning recently about the 6-parter being too long. This is a 4-parter. Was about right, and there's a lot of comedy in there, but it's comedy in context. So it wasn't just gratuitous comedy. It was comedy that people would laugh at. You know, there's a lot of Monty Python references, but fitted very well into the story. So I think that worked very well and kept the story going. I mean, yeah, the Iron Grom is probably sort of a stereotypical peasant over a warlord, but he did work very well. I think he must have had an absolute field day, day you can blame this. You know, sort of just go ahead and just be a hell you want, just do what you want to do. He must have loved it. I thought Kevin Lindsay is the first on time was very good, and I think the Doctor was in his element as well, because he was able to lord it over Sarah Jane, sort of putting it in the place. But also the way he worked with the scientists, I think he's. Really enjoyed this story, laughed a lot, thoroughly enjoyed it. It's one of the best ones we've seen for some time.
Thank you, Andy. Kirby, what do you think?
Perfect Doctor Who.
There you go.
Thank you. This one was, I think, the outside of the Three Doctors, which I saw first. This is the first John Pertwee story where it was just him that I ever saw. Because since I was such a devoted Sarah Jane fan, I had to acquire her first story. It was one of the first DVDs I got, too. And just love the story from the first time I saw it. I've probably seen it a good dozen times now, because it's just worth pulling out and playing. Anytime I want a good, funny Doctor Who story.
Well done, Kirby.
10 out of 10.
Well done, Kirby.
Yeah.
So, can you describe your favourite Doctor Who story without mentioning the title of it?
That's hard.
Just think of one. Come straight to your mind. Today would be nice.
They're in World War II, and there is this evil child who, like, just says, "Have you seen my mummy?" And, like, the whole town gets infected by it. And then he realizes that his mother was like that all along.
This is Nabil Shaban, and you are listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Right, somebody come through on the video feed, and it's Laurie Nix. She says, sounding a wee bit garbled at the start. I think obviously talking about Kirby. And then she says, better now. That was when Kirby shut up. So thank you, Laurie. Right. So we can move on to feedback. See if we can find some. I'm sure we've got some here somewhere. If I can find my Gmail. Andy, stop creaking your daughter. Sounds like Resident Evil for a minute there. oh, God. You're putting me off. I'm trying to find my Google page.
All right.
Yes, listeners, if you want to send emails into the show, and please do, it's 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. And I've got
Joshua Dieball, he doesn't like it as much as the rest of us.
When did he post that? I haven't seen that come up.
Just seconds ago.
Oh, I'll have to refresh my screen.
Under the picture where I show.
Oh, not the live feed one. Thank you for that, Joshua. Okay, so we have some feedback, and I've got some fantastic news for Mrs. Melrose. But we'll start with Jeff Waddle, who says, a pretty simple Pertwee story, but probably one of his best ones. Certainly the best Sontaran episode we have seen, of course. Given that they are a clone race, there are lots of unseen stories involving them, which take place all over the world. My personal favourite being Lynx Africa.
In what?
Lynx Africa. It's a deodorant. Kirby.
Yeah. Still, my brother said earlier the Lynx effect. That was yes, that came yes. from as well.
I remember
Kirby. You will understand. It's a yeah, British deodorant.
Yeah. Yes, thank you. I remember. Yeah. All right, thank you. I remember getting into an argument at school with my geography teacher when we had to learn the countries of the UK. Sorry, counties of the UK. And he didn't understand that Wessex wasn't on the map. I'm not sure who is the better shot with the bow and arrow. Hal Bobber, the archer, who can hit a probic vent from a distance, or Robin of Sherwood, who can hit a vent in a spaceship from 5 miles away.
Yes.
Yes, marvellous. Right then. Right, I'm gonna, there's two messages come through from Alan T. Butcher, Mrs. Melrose.
Oh, God.
So, what?
Messenger is up and ready.
Well, good. I've got to try and get my messenger up and ready first. So let's try to open a different Facebook page so I can get this done. And while I'm getting the second one, what's your name again? Debbie
Melrose. Mary
Blitzlang. Mary Melrose. There she is. Right, message, and here it comes. Right, so that's probably the smaller of the two. That's what she said.
Oh, one minute. Thal Wars, A New Hope. Dear 20 Megabyters, Planet of the Daleks, obviously.
We're going back in time here.
A bit late, going back a bit. Is, of course, a closely studied examination of the dangers of refrigeration in the modern food industry and the importance of thawing your old story elements before putting them back on the plate. The culmination of the story is, of course, the editorial and production staff's intervention by Ice Volcano to move the Daleks onto a new story. It should be noted that the metatextual message here is strong. The author's clear endorsement of recycling is palpable. It is hard to think any element of the narrative which has not been used is one or more of his previous scripts. We also learn that Chancellor Goth worked undercover with the Thals. Is these early skirmishes of the Time War? I think that might
Andy,
be...
Andy, what are you doing?
He's heavy breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Andy, are you right?
I'm fine, I'm not breathing.
No, I'm not breathing.
I'm not breathing, yes, I'm not breathing. Yeah, I'm fine.
Well, there's
definitely an element of...
yeah, it's your dulcet tones having an effect on him, Deb. Carry on.
All in all, The Planet of the Daleks is another similar story from The Terrifying Nation. Notwithstanding the...
Bing!
Notwithstanding the autoplagiary, it all comes together reconstituted as... a decently fun action adventure. Just about feeling the... Oh, my God. Hexahebdominal Ford man to the right degree. Next up, Doctor Who and the prophylactic covered maggots. Those are my thoughts, Alan T. Butcher.
Right, take a breath. Oh, I might have accidentally pasted that twice. Hang on. I did. That would have been a disaster, reading it twice, wouldn't it? I would have to do it three times. Hang on. I'll do it again. Here we go. Part two. Okay.
The colour of death is green. Dear 20 Megabyters, the green death is, of course, a closely studied...
Here we go, yeah.
Corporate irresponsibility on environmental impact. It is no surprise to discover the ruthlessness and despicable actions of a global corporation run by a literally faceless force. The contemporaneous inclusion of the exploitation of a disused mine is obviously an allusion to conflict with wicked Heath government with the miners at the time, and may well have helped tip the public against that government, which was dismissed from power within the year. Mm-hmm. It should be noted that whilst some might point out that the flies that emerged from the super maggots could not fly, nor even support their body, or perhaps conceivably get enough oxygen to function...
Science fiction fantasy TV show.
Those people should remember it's only a TV show, and that's how bad corporations can be. We also learn that the third Doctor got the pronunciation of Metabellus 3 wrong. I got it wrong as well.
Yes, you did.
Also,
right.
The Doctor...
Hang on, Debbie.
What?
Carry on.
Also, the Doctor once again exhibits his proclivity for wearing women's clothing, which will likely soon become ubiquitous in the next series in 2018. All in all, the Green Death is one of the great polemics. Miss Grant's departure, to which they have been building up, is taken to its logical conclusion with her choosing to share her life with a human analogue of the Doctor. The comfortable accomplishing of a sophisticated storyline and the exit of such a well-established character very much justifies the employment of an hexahebdominal format. Come on! Next up, Dr.
Oh, Andy. Andy.
So
did your thing fall over?
The iPad fell to school, yes.
That's a bit clumsy.
Next up, yeah. Doctor Who and the 12th Century Time Potato. Those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butcher.
Yeah, thank you very much. Alan. Right, let's see if I can get the timing on this one right. No, I can't. Nearly worked. Sorry about that, Ian. We'll try that again. Take two.
Take two what?
No, it's opening up an iTunes. There we go, there's a double whammy for you.
Hello, 20 McMutt Podcast.
Oh, for God's sake. Hang on. iTunes is
open. I'm Robert Holmes.
There we go.
Sarah Jane, in her first story, is a very strong character. She organises and leads a raid on a castle. Urubish makes himself a monocle using a grindstone. I don't think that would be possible. The sets and actors are good in this. The BBC is good at this sort of thing.
Yes.
Sarah Jane's feminist speech to the kitchen staff. Well, I suppose it is comedy. A spaceship that always destroys its launch pad is a bit odd. Was Mr. Potato Head mashed in the explosion? Bye for now.
Short good, but sweet there from me.
Very good.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think there's anything else. Is there anybody sent anything else through?
Yeah, there's comments on several threads.
Is there? Well, Paul Gobert says, is that the same guy? Well, I never knew that. Really, really like the Time Warrior, one of my favourite Pertwee. David Dacre's Iron Grin is wonderfully over the top. Pertwee hams it up a treat. Great fun stuff, essentially what we said. Then you posted a picture of Jeremy Bullock, who apparently is Boba Fett. Yes?
Yes.
Yeah. Anything else, Kirby, that I've missed?
Well, there's more down the thread.
Is there where?
Alan T. Butcher says that's a lot of Bullock.
Yes, he did say that, yes. And then we already did Joshua Dyball's comments, so it's not that much more,
well,
is it?
Well, did he say, okay, fine.
Yeah, okay, fine. I know, I'm right again, aren't I? Yeah, so if anything else crops up, anybody wants to make any comments while we're live on air, that will be good, and somebody spots it, that would be even better. Right, it's now time for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One.
The past is another country. 987's just the Isle of Wight.
Right then, spiced it up a little bit this week because I know you lot are a load of rubbish and don't bother listening to the show. Therefore, there is now a round of questions about last week's episode of the podcast. So, woe betide anybody who didn't listen. But we start off with the current scores are in last place with no points, it's Kirby. In second place with 4 points, it's Andy. And in the lead with 5 points, it's Debbie. So, with that in mind, Andy, who do you think is going to win? There's three rounds. First round. Questions on last week's episode of the podcast. Second round, Trivial Pursuit questions. And the third round, questions on the Time Warrior. Well, it might be split up into a couple of rounds. Well, I'll decide later anyway. So, who do you think is going to be winning then, Andy?
Debbie.
Yeah. Who do you think is going to be winning then, Kirby?
Andy.
Okay. Who do you think is going to be winning then, Debbie?
Andy.
Ooh, that's interesting. All right then, Andy, who do you think is going to be last?
Me.
Interesting, because there'll be no Mary this week. Nobody can go for Mary. Kirby, who do you think is going to be last?
Andy.
You can't have him on both. Sorry.
Me. You bet, why don't you?
And Debbie, who do you think is going to be last?
Me.
Okay, remember you all have jokers each. The first round of questions.
Where's my joker thing?
Don't know. The first round of.
In the corner.
The first round. Please listen. It's very important. First round of questions are worth double points. So each one of these questions is worth 4 points. If you use your joker on these questions, it will double to how many points, Debbie?
Eight.
So the first question, therefore, goes to, if I can get my facts right, yeah, Andy. Sorry, let's put that in the corner so I can see it. Andy, this is your question based on last week's episode of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. Right. Which Doctor's bumper was used at the opening of the show?
Colin Baker.
Right, so that's 2 points. Well, actually, that's 4 points in the bonus pot. Anybody for half of that to get it right?
Sylvester McCoy.
Oh, dear.
I didn't hear it, sorry.
Oh, well, there's a surprise. The clue there is the fact that that was at the beginning of the show, right at the beginning. So the fact that you know none of you got that bit right means that none of you listened to last week's show. Oh, dear.
I didn't.
We were present during the recording.
Well, that was added on afterwards during the editing process. Obviously, I don't do a lot of editing,
but don't edit.
I have to do some editing. I've got to put titles and stuff on it and disclaimers and things. But not a great deal of the main bulk of the show. Right. Right. Next question goes to Kirby.
Master.
The Doctor and Benton are in Bessie and they're obviously CSO. Sorry. Their Doctor and... This is a quote, right? You've got to find out who said this quote, right? The Doctor and Benton are in Bessie and are obviously badly CSO'd.
I know.
Andy.
Well, I wasn't even the show, so it definitely wasn't me.
Was it me?
No, yes. You can't. Right, point deduct. Hang on, it's 12 points in the bonus pot. 4 points deduct from Kobe for having two goes. And Debbie gets 2 points for, because he was going to. Yes, you know, you said yes, so you knew it was that, yeah. So 3 points
brilliant,
for Debbie.
Brilliant, that is.
Okay.
It's only us.
Couldn't even get his own quote. Right, and he was on the show.
But he got. And I wasn't on. He thought it was me, and I wasn't even on it.
Right, next question goes to Debbie. It's a quote again. These are all quotes now. Who said, I did enjoy it?
Me?
I'll have a go.
No, hang on. I've got to add your points to the bonus pot. No, it wasn't you, Debbie. Go on, Andy.
Oh, it was Mary, then.
Nope. Yes, it was Mary, yes.
All right. What was my ding, then?
That was a sort of I hit it sideways. It doesn't work that way. Right, next question goes to Andy.
Got him.
This is another quote from the show, as they all are.
Oh, okay.
I might get points deducted.
I will go with Debbie.
I know.
Hang on, I'll put the points in the bonus spot. Hang on, I've got the points. I've put 2016 in it. Hang on, right. Debbie, yes?
I think it's Kirby.
I love the way she says, I know. No.
I thought it was Kirby. He's always going on about points being deducted. Nope. Was it Mary then?
It was Ian Kirk.
Oh. This isn't working very well.
Kirby. Kirby. Right. Right then. Who said, yeah?
Andy.
I wasn't on the show! Oh, is that Kirby? I wasn't on the show last week! Do you not pay attention? For goodness sake!
No, it wasn't Andy Kirby, no. Anybody?
Was it Kirby?
Oh, dearie me. No, it wasn't. I don't know why I'm bothering putting these in the bonus pot. Someone's going to get all these points quite undeservedly.
Then
me. Me, because Kirby went no, and I went yeah. Right,
obviously
Debbie.
I'm gonna have to start. Is this gonna become a regular,
possibly, if I find time to do it? Right then, this is Debbie.
I'll start listening to the show.
That might be a good idea, mightn't it, Debbie? Look, Debbie, are you still there?
Yeah.
Right. Who said this? What was the one that came before Planet of the Daleks?
I think I know.
That's like, but it wasn't me, Kirby.
Me?
Pardon?
Was it me?
Nope.
Right. It was me.
Oh. Nope. It was Mary who said that. Okay. Right. No point in doing any more because there's only two questions left and there's three of you. But the other two, just for fun, were... Oh, let's do them on free-for-all. These are free-for-all ones, shall we? Yes, of course. Right. Less than 3 months from Christmas.
I know.
Andy said it first.
Kirby.
My goodness.
Yeah, I know because I know I said it.
And the last one of this round is, I did skip on a bit. Who said that?
I know.
Go on, Em.
Debbie.
Me.
Is the correct answer. Salvaged it a little bit at the end. Right. So the first question of the next round has 34 points available in the bonus pot. And this is from the goodness. Trivial Pursuit things that are currently in my hand before we move on to the questions about the
I think
drama.
You're going to kill me with laughter today.
No, I think we'll probably recover from this.
Really?
And I've gone and put all the scores in the wrong column. I give up. Right on. I'm just correcting my scoring system here. How on earth has that happened? Hang on.
Bear just with. Put most of the points in my column. That's fine.
No, I won't do that, Kirby, to be fair. Right then, so, hang on, I've got to change. At the moment, you've got hundreds of jokers, which is not how the game works. Right, okay, now I've put the scores
jokers
right.
Jokers to the left of me, jokers to the right, obviously.
Right, the first...
Joker's in front of me.
Yeah.
Excuse me. First Trivial Pursuit question goes to Andy. What was the name of the Kral's home planet, the fourth Doctor story... Android Invasion. So what was the name of the Kral's home planet in the fourth Doctor story, Android Invasion? He said, no idea. That adds another 2 points to the bonus pot, which now stands at 36 points. Kirby says, no idea. So that, anybody have any idea?
Mm-mm.
Now starts at 38 points then while I press play this particular jingle. The answer was Poseidon. Okay, Poseidon. Right, next question goes to Kirby. Again, this is a bonus pot question with 38 points available. Kirby. In Timelash, the Doctor and Perry uncover a mural on Carfel of which previous regeneration of the Doctor?
I think I know.
Since I haven't seen it, I have no idea.
Well, you've got 12 Doctors. Sorry, how many Doctors?
You want me to make a guess?
Well, it's going to be a guess. It's going to be in Timelash, right? So what Doctor Time episode Lash. Was the Timelash? So it's a previous to the Doctor who did Timelash. So which one was it?
Call it...
Yes, hello?
The first.
Nothing I know.
Right, so there's another... 2 points. And Andy knows.
There was a third Doctor.
41 points go to Andy. Because I can't be bothered to half it. But yes, that is correct. It was the third Doctor and Joe Grant as well. You would have got a bonus point. No, you wouldn't, because you had 40
points. Go, Andy.
Yeah, I know. You obviously win, don't you?
God, so... is painful. All right, Kirby next. No, Debbie next. Debbie next. Right, Debbie, in The Almost People, what substance was a ganger made from?
Was it wax?
If you were in the makeup room, maybe. Yes, but no.
Plastic.
Pardon?
Nothing.
Right, anybody with a correct answer?
She said plastic.
Did she?
Yeah. I didn't. No, I said it to myself afterwards because I knew that I'd got it.
Well, I'll say plastic.
Oh, Kirby.
The flesh was the answer.
Oh, okay.
Right. Moving on. The scores then. Let's do the scores. Right. In last place with -3 points, it's Kirby. In second place with 8 points, it's Debbie. In the lead with 56 points, it's Andy.
That's ludicrous.
Right, Andy.
Yep.
What was the name of the tourist bus that Biff, Val and Jethro Crane were aboard in the story Midnight? You won't get this one.
How do you spell that?
Midnight, M-I-D-N-I-G-H-T.
The noise that Andy just made.
Oh.
I have not the faintest clue.
Right, okay. Okay, yep. I'll put 2 points in there because I'm feeling generous today. Anybody with a correct answer?
Nope.
Okay. Right, so the answer was Crusader 50. Hang on, the dog's yipping in the other room. It's really irritating me tonight.
I have an experiment going to see if I lose a point, by the way.
Well, no one's come to the stupid ears.
It hasn't happened yet, which surprises me.
Right. Dealt with them. Where do we get up to? Who's that last question for?
You're the one who got up.
It's me.
It's Kirby's question. Kirby.
Right. Oh, Master.
In remembrance of the Daleks.
Ooh.
Sorry, got hiccups. What? I can't read the question. What has the Seventh Doctor pre-programmed the Hand of Omega to destroy when activated?
Skaro.
Correct.
I wasn't sure enough to do Joker.
No. Nobody's done their Jokers. Imagine if Andy had done his Joker on that bonus pot question that got him.
I should have done, actually. I was getting convinced of it as well. Blimey.
Right, Debbie.
Of course, this is live.
Yes.
No. Right, oh, good Lord. I can't read that one. I'll try. In Love and Monsters, the Doctor managed to restore the life essence of some of the Absorbaloth's victims. But how was Ursula forced to spend the rest of her days?
I'm going with Joker. She was a painting slab.
Yeah, they actually came up with options on that, so I'm going to give you an extra point for that.
Really?
That's,
options.
Extra
for that.
Options. There were options available on that question.
It's the fact that they insinuate they're having a sex life as well.
Oh, please. Don't want to talk about things like that. Right, so bonus pot, 3 points.
But we're getting rock hard, wouldn't you?
Ooh, that's very inappropriate. It's a point deducted for Andy.
Thank you.
Right. Bonus pot question is this. I've done that. Well, yeah. In what year was Bowie Base 1 set up on Mars? You won't get this one.
No, I won't.
No, me neither.
What sort of question is that?
2036.
A good effort, but nowhere near it. It was actually 2058. So.
22 years out. Not
okay.
Bad.
Okay, next bonus pot question is this. 5 points available now. On Messaline, the war between the Hath and the humans was said to have gone on for generations. Well, yeah, sorry, I did write that, said that right. But when the Doctor discovered the truth, how long had it actually been since the war started?
Oh, God.
I don't know the exact amount. I can
a
guess.
A long time.
Well, somebody needs to come up with an answer. Days? Beg your pardon, Debbie?
37 days?
I thought we should have got it right then, but no, it wasn't, no.
It was with maybe 5 days.
Oh, dear. No, it wasn't that either. It was 7 days.
I almost said 7.
Well, almost saying it and actually saying it are two completely different things. Right. Another go at the bonus pot, which now has 7 points in it. Has anyone played their Jokers yet, by the way?
I did.
Oh. Yes, you did,
of course you did, yeah. Well done. Right, 7 points in the bonus pot. There we go. Right. What is the name of the newsreader beamed into the cars on the motorway when the Doctor and Martha visit New York in 5,050... whatever year it says on this card, 5,053, whatever it is, I don't know. Well, who was it? Sorry. The newsreader. You won't get this one.
No, we won't.
Anybody? No.
Nope.
Okay, it was Sally Calypso.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah. Hmm.
Right, another go at the bonus pot then. There's 9 points in it now. How many light years away from Earth was the planet Deimos, where the demons were from?
Oh, God.
You won't get this one either.
No, we won't.
180.
No, anybody else?
50.
555.
No. Surprise, surprise, you'll be very surprised. It's 60,000. Because not that long ago since we watched it. 10 points in the bonus pot for this question. In what year did the 11th Doctor and the Tesselector encounter Adolf Hitler?
1934.
No.
1939.
No, it was 1938. Okay. Another go at the bonus pot question. 11 points available for this question. Which key member of the suffragette movement of the early 20th century that eventually helped secure equal voting rights for women in 1928 stole a laser spanner.
Can you start the question again? I didn't understand a word of that question.
Well, listen then. Shut up. Which key member of the suffragette movement of the early 20th century that eventually helped secure equal voting rights for women in 1928 stole a laser spanner from the doctor?
Emily Pankhurst.
Correct answer. Should have played Joker. Which ends the Trivial Pursuit round. So at the moment, in the scores are in minus one is Kirby. That's in last place. Yay. Second place with 14 points, Debbie, in the lead with 66 points. It's Andy. Okay, here we go then. Questions on the Time Warrior. This is Andy's question.
Okay, well, I'm
going to know. Pardon?
I've got my notes.
All right. What is Iron Grom moaning about at the beginning of the story?
I know.
Joker.
Yeah.
Right. It was the wine.
Well, not what I've got on my card.
Well, it was, though. Did you say the wine?
He was moaning about something.
Hang on. Kirby said he knows. Debbie.
I wasn't going to say, because Kirby said I know.
That's all right. Let you off then.
He was eating meat that had been dead for a long, long time.
I'll give you that one.
You did also moan about the wine.
He did, but that's not what he said at the beginning of the story. That was afterwards, because he said, give me wine.
It had been salted, Kirby.
Yeah, right. The actual quote was, or the answer was, eating a sheep that had been dead for a year. That was what he was moaning about, specifically. But Kirby gets the point. Right, Kirby.
Master.
What insult does Iron Gron aim at his men when they are too scared to go out in the forest at night?
Joker.
Yeah.
Chicken-hearted knaves.
Did Andy play as Joker on the last round?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Oh, you got it wrong, man. And you got it wrong, though, didn't you?
Yes. Like it makes a difference.
Woo, he's getting cocky now. Right, Debbie.
Yeah.
What hotel is the Doctor's lab not exactly like, according to the Brigadier?
I beg your pardon?
What hotel is the Doctor's lab not exactly like, according to the Brigadier?
Is it the Ritz?
Beg your pardon?
Is it the Ritz?
Love the way she sort of says it as if she doesn't actually...
I've got no notes. I have zero notes. Oh, yeah. I just watched it once.
So it was a guess, was it?
She stopped doing the notes.
I stopped doing the notes. There's nothing. Look,
One point in the bonus pot. And as he said, as Andy said, as if it makes a difference. Right, 1 point in the bonus pot. This is the question. How long has it been since Rubish last saw his wife and family, as he tells the doctor at unit? Go on then, Andy.
3 days.
Correct. 67 points he's got now. Bloody hell. Right, so scores are in last place with 6 points, Kirby. In second place with 16 points, Debbie. And then the lead with 67 points, Andy. Next round of questions, Andy. This is yours.
There you go.
What is Sarah Jane's first word to the doctor?
Wait, didn't Andy just have...
No, it was Debbie's go.
No, the bonus pop question, that was.
Yes, oh,
was.
I didn't know that.
Pay attention, then. Right, Andy. So did you get the question, Andy?
No, I didn't, actually.
I'll do it again, then. Right, what is Sarah Jane's first word to the doctor?
Hello.
That's a correct answer.
Oh, really?
Yes, she's a very polite lady, Sarah Jane. Kirby.
Master.
What is Sarah Jane's Aunt Lavinia doing in America?
I think she was on a speaking tour.
Oh, that'll do.
Yeah,
near enough. A lecture tour, but that'll do. Right, Debbie.
Yes.
In the lab, what does Rubish do that annoys the doctor?
I know.
No, come on, Debbie.
He uses the side of the TARDIS as a chalkboard.
Yeah, picking up points now. Kirby knew that one. He's very annoyed he didn't get a chance to answer it. Right then, Dandy. Andy.
Okay.
What is the doctor making in the lab as he explains to Sarah Jane?
I know.
Oh, God. It's a rhodium particle detector.
Another annoyance for Kirby.
You know, I said that earlier while we were discussing things. You said, did he say that?
Moving on, Kirby.
Master.
What does the Brigadier exclaim when the doctor tells him that Rubish is missing?
Oh, my giddy ass. I love that.
Debbie.
Yes.
What is the name of the EastEnder actress who plays Eleanor?
Wow.
What's
the name? June Brown. Yeah.
Okay.
Andy.
Whatever.
Yeah.
What is Sarah Jane's first verbal attack on Irongrun? You won't get this one. You didn't last time either. These are exactly the same questions.
Oh, okay. What's he going to do? No, you're right. I won't. No. Okay, go on.
Anybody?
Haven't the foggiest.
No, she didn't say that either. The answer was get lost.
Oh, you know, I said that earlier. I said that. I was like,
he keeps beating himself up today.
No need to. He's on 71 points.
I don't think Andy has to worry about anything today.
Kirby.
Master.
How does Irongrun...
I've got it written down.
All right, yes. How does Irongrun describe Eleanor?
As a narrow-hipped vixen.
Yes. And I've got that written down as well.
Debbie.
Yes.
What is Lynx's full military title?
Oh, God. I think I know.
Pardon? Did you say you don't know, Deb?
I don't know.
I think I know.
Right, I forgot to do a bonus pot question on the last round.
I've got part of it, at least.
Part of it isn't exactly the answer I'm looking for, but try have a go at Andy.
A commander in the 5th Space Fleet. In the Honourable. Something like that.
Probably giving you a point for that, but the answer is Commander Lynx.
Can I say?
Go on then.
Commander Lynx, 5th Sundaran Space Unit.
Word for word, perfect.
Is it unit or fleet?
Unit.
Unit. Right.
So who was that question originally for? Kirby? No, I mean Andy.
No, it's for me.
Debbie. Yeah. Right. No, bonus pot then. 3 points.
Oh, okay.
3 points available here. When Rubish frees the Doctor from the Sontaran contraption, what excuse does he make to leave?
I think I know.
Go on.
He has to go find a young girl.
Oh, yes.
Sounds a bit suspicious, doesn't it?
Okay. Old man, young girl.
Andy.
Yep.
What does Irongrun say to the Doctor just before he swings his axe at him at the end of episode 2?
No.
Right, anybody?
Nope.
It's all gone quiet over there. The answer was, he who strikes Irongrun dies. Right. Next one goes to Kirby.
Master.
What is the name of Irongrun's sidekick? Oh, good grief.
Bloodaxe.
Oh, yes. Right.
Debbie.
Ding, ding, yes. Ding. I heard no ding.
Well, listen. Right. How did Irongrun describe the Doctor to Lynx?
I know.
This was going to be my quote, actually. Pardon?
What's it?
No.
Hang on. I've got to play a jingle. What did you say, Andy?
It's a long-shanked rascal with a mighty nose.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so 2 points in the bonus pot. If I can find the question. There we are. Right, how did the Doctor describe...
Is this a bonus,
Kirby. How did the Doctor describe Irongrun to Sarah?
Oh, no.
I know.
Go on, Kirby.
Nasty, brutish, and short.
is the correct answer.
See, if only you hadn't had those other questions earlier, I would do good with this one. Because
should have watched last week's show then, shouldn't you? Watched it? Listened to last week's show.
They could have watched on Facebook.
You could have watched on Facebook, yeah, but you didn't.
Yeah, but it doesn't do the editing live on Facebook.
It's still the same verbal, apart from the beginning with Peter Davison. The verbal content. Right then, Andy.
Yep.
Who was put in charge of painting the dummies' faces?
It was Sir Edward.
Sir Edward. And Kirby.
Master.
What of the great masters did the Doctor fancy going to visit?
I know.
Rembrandt.
Debbie.
Yes.
How does the Doctor suggest to Sarah that she should look upon the Time Lords as?
I know.
Hang on. Got to do that. Who said I know first, Debbie?
We both did.
I think Andy did. Andy?
I think Andy got in there, I'm afraid.
Andy?
Galactic Ticket Inspectors.
Right. And at one point...
Whoa. Did you say galactic? It was intergalactic.
Oh, shut up. Right. Bonus pot question. 1 point for this one.
Oh, wow.
What position does Iron-Gron offer Lynx when he becomes king?
I know.
Yes?
General.
Right. Not many pot questions left now. And the scores are, in last place with 20 points, it's Debbie. In second place with 23 points, it's Kirby. And in the lead with 75 points, it's Andy. Are you snickering at Debbie Bellrose? Next question goes to Andy. After the Doctor's smoke bombardment, try saying that. After the Doctor's smoke bomb bombardment sends Iron-Gron's men running in fear, what does Iron-Gron call his knaves? And this made me laugh when I watched it, actually.
Oh, yeah.
What did I think?
I've got written down here, fleet on a griddle. I think that's the wrong quote.
No. Anybody?
No, I can remember him insulting them, but I can't remember what he
insulted
said.
Them, but I don't know why.
You lot are useless. I did give a clue earlier on that he used animal sort of references to insult them. It was
what
mice.
Kind of animal?
Mice on this particular occasion.
Mice, okay. Yes.
You mice! Kirby.
Master.
Who played Iron-Gron?
David Dacre.
Debbie.
Yes.
Who broke wind just then?
Me.
Right.
No, you should not get a ding for that. Right then. Debbie. When Rubish asks the Doctor if Iron-Gron is a nice chap, what does the Doctor say?
No idea. I'm sorry.
No, he didn't say that.
I'm very useless without notes.
Nope, didn't say that. Anybody?
No.
Oh, dear. I wouldn't have got this one either. The answer was... He would commend him for the Royal Society. He would commend him...
I think he wouldn't commend him.
I probably wrote it down wrong. But you know what I mean. All right, bonus part. 4 points. What is the prize for shooting the Doctor down? Ooh, gone quiet again. Anybody? Hello? Are you still there?
No.
50 gold pieces.
good grief. I'd love to give you the points for that one. The answer was a bag of gold, but
a bag of gold has 50 gold pieces in it.
Yeah, you never know what a bag's worth.
Don't know how big the bag is, dear. I'm not going to give you that one, though, Debbie. Good try. All right, 5 points in the bonus spot, then. How does the Doctor escape being shot by Iron-Gron's men?
I know.
Go on, Andy.
Behind the chair.
Andy.
No, he swings off of the chandelier, doesn't he?
Word for word, perfect. Swings on the chandelier. Have I got enough questions for one more round? I have indeed. Right. So, Andy.
Mm-hmm.
What age does the Time Lord cease to be a lad?
200.
Right. Ooh, well, that didn't work. I'm going to give him some points. That didn't work. Kirby.
Master.
Which scientist gets sent back to the 20th century first? You won't get this one.
one of the ones who isn't rubbish.
I think
go on then, Andy.
Was it Macmillan?
No, it wasn't Lynn Macmillan, no. It was Morrison.
Oh, okay, close. Right. It
starts
with them at the end, so it wasn't far off.
Right, and Debbie.
Yes.
Why did Lynx's spaceship blow up?
Please get it.
It probably won't.
Whoever gets it gets the bonus points as well as this one, so there's two extra points, right. So, go on.
I think
the Doctor's taken out the...
No. It's something started too early. It's like the loading has started too early or something like that, wasn't it?
Not near enough. Those points will have to disappear into the ether. The answer was because he hit the takeoff button too soon.
Okay.
Okay, right. So the current scores are in last place with 20 points, it's Debbie. In second place with 25 points, it's Kirby. And in the lead with 82 points, it's Andy. Right, so Andy predicted Debbie to win and remains at 82 for that, and predicted Andy to be at the bottom and remains at 82 for that. Kirby predicted Andy to win, so that doubles his score of 50, and predicted himself to be at the bottom, but unfortunately that leaves him with 50. Debbie predicted Andy to win and predicted herself to be at the bottom. Hang on, straight on it. So that four leaves the final scores of this week's edition of You Won't Get This One at. In last place with 50 points, it's Kirby. In second place with 80 points, it's Debbie. And the winner this week with 82 points, it's Andy.
Let's go with the highest scoring thing that I've ever had.
2 points in it.
This is Andrew Cartmell, and you are listening to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Yeah, but Debbie, you got three times as many points because you predicted rather than actually get the points yourself, didn't you?
Yeah.
You scored 20 and got 60 through Master. Predictions.
Yes,
that's how
Kirby.
I end up winning a lot.
Master?
Yes, Kirby?
I got you. You didn't take a point off for me.
Why? What do you mean? Why would.
My mouse ears!
Yeah, because I know you had them on all the time. I thought that would be a bit mean to take the points off of wearing mouse ears for the whole of the episode.
Well, you've taken points off for me for distraction before.
That's not really a distraction. That's just wearing mouse ears. It's not. Did you find that distracting, Debbie?
I noticed it several occasions.
Yes, but did it distract you in any way? No. Right then.
No, Kirby being Kirby.
Yeah. Okay, right, we've got some comments come through on the live feed. Joshua Dybel says, not an outstanding episode, but pretty good. Good to see the scary-looking Suntaran, not like those Nancy ones in New Who. Funny seeing Sarah Jane turning on the Doctor and Dot Cotton popping up. Surprised to hear her unmistakable voice. Yes.
To go on a slight sidetrack, have any of you seen Shakedown, the fan-produced Suntaran story?
No, but I've heard of it.
We did that. We did the audiovisual for launch, and we spotted the fact that on the credits there was a Brain Croucher. They actually misspelled his name. And the guy was, oh my god, he's all for a production.
Well, it was an amateur production. Alan T. Butcher says, I hope both my feedbacks will be okay, albeit neither are the Time Warrior. I'm playing catch up. We're happy to get any feedback, aren't we, everybody?
Yes.
Debbie loves it particularly, doesn't you?
Debbie, yes. So that's, well, I think, a little bit of it for feedback. We can move on to sponsors.
Well, I was looking at Who News as well.
Oh, go on then. We'll go to Doctor Who News. Anything on there, Debbie?
There's literally two things since last week.
Is there?
Well, three things.
Well, go on then.
The Doctor Who Project, the latest season of Adventures from the Roaring fan-written fiction series The Doctor Who Project is currently in production.
It is.
Which is the 10th Doctor and companion Hannah Redfoot as they travel through all of time and space in seven new adventures.
Okay.
And that's
stop fiddling with your microphone.
They're doing.
Grief.
Right. Trevor Martin has passed, 1930-2017. The actor Trevor Martin, the first actor to play the Doctor on stage, has died at the age of 87. First appeared in Doctor Who in 1969, playing a Time Lord in the final second Doctor story, The War Games. However, he is best remembered for playing the Doctor in a stage play based on the series Doctor Who and the Daleks in the Seven Keys to Doomsday, which ran in London's Adelphi Theatre for 4 weeks at the end of 1974. Yeah. And Doctor Who Moments in Time, 40 Years of K-9. It was 40 years ago today on Saturday, 8th of October, 1977, that we first met the Doctor's tin dog when K-9 made his debut appearance in Doctor. Yay! 40 years after his first appearance, K-9's character is still in production with original co-creator Bob Baker, along with Paul Tamms, working on a feature film, K-9 Time Quake, which will feature the robot dog up against classic Doctor Who villain Omega!
Omega!
Don't care.
It's like Deb. Should we we've done two brides recently, both of them called Naomi. N-A-O-M-I. She can't not call them Naomi.
Naomi,
it's Naomi. But never mind. Potato potato. Here we are with Who Won Limited. Master. What?
It's kind of funny. You probably don't see the same stuff on your view of the Doctor Who news as we do, because it's probably the side things, the ads are probably region.
Yes.
But they're showing ads on our version for a showing on Retro TV here in the U.S. today of The Time Warrior.
Oh, what a coincidence. Unless, of course, they're listening to this show, put it on specific for listeners to the show. Right then, Who Won Limited, as a whowon.co.uk. Doctor Who specialists in Ride on the Isle of Wight are sponsors for many years, even though I did send them an email recently saying, can I have your logo, please, for my banner that I'm going to have at the Isle of Wight Comic Con? Lavasi sent me a logo straight away. Who Won didn't even reply to the email.
Just
go across the street or something.
So their latest products are Genesis of the Daleks audio CD, Seventh Doctor Seventh Mr. Man book, which of course Matthew Kressel probably already has, Companion Chronicles Ninth Doctor 1, The Lives of Captain Jack, Book of Hooniversal Records, that sounds quite interesting, doesn't it, Debbie?
Yes.
And we talked about the survival last week, of course. I was talking about the cover that Alistair did, the famous cover with the ripped canvas that he did especially for survival. We've got coming soon products ready for Crimble. 12th Doctor new sonic screwdriver, superfluous because the 12th Doctor won't be with us for much longer. Also, Night Witches, a Big Finish story featuring the second Doctor. Another second Doctor one, Outliers. Alien Amongst Us 1. I can't speak tonight. Aliens Among Us 1, a Torchwood story. Behemoth. What does that mean, Behemoth? That's a sixth Doctor story. And the classic Doctor Who Monsters 2, featuring different stories with all the Big Finish Doctors. And Dalek Untold History of the Universe's Deadliest Enemies, which is essentially about Darth Vader and a few other... Oh, no, that would be a different genre, wouldn't it? So, yeah, so loads of very interesting and perfect Doctor Who fan gifts available at whowon.co.uk. Aren't there, Debbie?
No, yes.
Okay, fine.
Right. Lavasi.
Sorry,
nodding away like an idiot.
Lavasi.co.uk.
Have
supplied us with a logo for the, if I can get round to doing it, banner that we're going to have at the Isle of Wight Comic Con.
Well,
yeah.
Couldn't one of you go over to whowon.co.uk and knock on the door and say, give us a logo?
One, I work from 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. They open at 11 a.m. Deb, what time do you work for from and to?
8:30 till 6.
They're open probably 11 till 5. When I'm home, I've got to work on wedding videos and photography editing. How am I going to find the time to drive 13 miles to Ride, find somewhere to park, which is difficult enough as it is, and then go and knock on their door and ask them to send me their logo when I've sent them an email? When it's, they may email actually travel at the speed of light. They would get it instantly.
Can we send them a pigeon?
Yes.
It might work.
So.
All I'm doing is I suggest that you do something.
I sent them an email.
Oh, by the way, they're open until 4:30 p.m.
Oh, well, that makes a difference then. Anyway.
9:30 in the morning to 4:30.
Well, they've changed their opening hours, so what? I work
every day.
6 a.m. to 2 p.m. Then I work again from 2 p.m. to about 10 p.m. Doing my other job. So I haven't got time to go all the way to Ryde.
They close Sundays and Mondays.
Yeah, I work Sundays. Mondays, I work. Right. Doctor Who. Scarves, specifically at lavazi.co.uk. They are a must for any Doctor Who fan, even if you don't like Tom Baker. You can also get the Christmas scarf. I think it's a good time to get it now because it's nearly Christmas, as Kirby keeps mentioning. And of course, the Fifth Doctor jumper is on sale at $29.99. Seventh Doctor hangi, I haven't got one of them yet. I do really need to get one. The Doctor Who tie features the design of the Fourth Doctor scarf. And, of course, your Pandorica opens scarf. Scarves are good this time of year, everybody. Of course, my favourite item, which is the Seventh Doctor official tank top. Brilliant stuff, of course. It's our TARDIS brolies and stuff like that also available at at lavazi.co.uk. So that completes our little feature on the sponsors. But we'd like to talk a little bit about Comic-Con. Hey, Deb.
Yay!
Now, I did have a short conversation with Ben, who runs several Comic-Cons around the region. Well, actually, around Britain, actually. But he's quite excited and has confirmed that you and I are in as media. And so that will be quite good fun. Don't quite know what access we've got yet because he hasn't decided. I have suggested to him that we have the facility for a Doctor Who celebrity to do a Facebook Live. He said that sounds quite good, but whether we're actually going to fit it into the schedule or not, I do not know. But if we do, it'll be quite spontaneous. So any listeners or to the show or group members, keep an eye out for notifications for a few spontaneous Facebook Lives that may pop up.
I was going to say, it's probably going to be us doing it.
No, it won't be you. No, it'll be me. No, you're going to do it. I'm only Jay. Oh, look.
I'm standing there looking pretty in the background.
No, okay. No, yeah, so can't guarantee it, but just keep your eyes open for it. That's only in about 3 or 4 weeks' time, so hey, not long to go. And the other thing we've got to try and make sure at this con is that Deb behaves herself. That's going to be quite a challenge, but we'll try our best to make sure that happens. But, yeah, that's it for Comic-Con. No extra guests announced yet, but they have got a rather large array. Well, we're keeping our fingers crossed for the Doctor Who ones. Obviously, Paul McGann did obviously drop out of the US one. I'm hoping he doesn't drop out of this one because I'd like to add him to my Met the Doctor collection.
I'm looking forward to that.
Or at least add him to my Spoken to the Doctor collection.
Well, it was the entire convention on this end that got messed up. So.
Yeah, I know. It's very sad. But at least I spoke to Peter Davison, even if I haven't met him. I have seen him, though, a couple of times.
I've met him.
I've met him.
I've met five Doctors.
Oh, I think I've met Pertwee. We've done this conversation before. Pertwee, McCoy, Baker... Capaldi.
Yeah, two more.
So I've done four.
Master
five
wins.
Two.
No, I've only done four, haven't I?
Master wins, though.
How?
Why?
Because Pertwee.
I've met Pertwee, Baker, Davison, Baker, McCoy, and I've seen McGann and Tennant.
Yeah, well, I met Pertwee, Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy, Capaldi.
And actually, okay, I think I win because I met Tom Baker outside the convention. I met him in the street, literally.
That's right. You win.
Thank you.
Yeah, but I have seen Tom Baker at the Doctor Who Festival. But I haven't actually met him. And I think that's better, really. Other doctors I could have met or seen. I saw Matt Smith there as well, obviously. He was in the same room as him. Couldn't speak to him, but he was essentially... He walked past me once.
I've seen Matt Smith. That's three of them from him.
Yeah. Met Jenna Coleman. Does that count? Obviously, meeting...
Since she was... since Clara was trying to be the doctor, yes.
I've got Pat Troutman's grandson's autograph.
Okay. Well, if I meet Pearl Mackie, that means I've met all the 12th Doctor's companions, which is quite good as well.
Yay.
And the 12th Doctor. Anyway, moving on. Next time we're going to be looking at the, I think it's I think it's called Invasion, and then it becomes Invasion, and then it becomes Invasion of the Dinosaurs.
The first episode is called Invasion. It's Invasion of the Dinosaurs.
Yes, that's what I just said. And it's a six-part story, so let's check the calendar, shall we? I'm quite capable myself of doing a six-part story.
It's five parts in color and one part in black and white.
Right, we've got a problem. Right. Uh-oh. If we don't do it next week, I suppose we could do it on the 22nd. I've only got a baptism that, but it's the beginning of my holiday. I could do it on the 22nd, but editing the show might be a bit of an issue because I'll be on holiday after that. Or we could just do it next week and just watch six episodes.
I'm going to struggle because we're actually away next weekend and not sure what time we get back.
Whereas I'm away on the 22nd, so I wouldn't be able to do that.
What about the new? Can you watch six episodes in a week then, like I can, Debbie?
Yes.
Considering I've got two full-time jobs.
Yes, I can do it.
I can.
So therefore, it's going to be the 15th of October to watch Invasion and then Invasion of the Dinosaurs.
That's one a night. We can do it.
I'll see what I can do. I have to try whether I can actually make the podcast or not, I'm not sure. I'll give it a go.
Well, we're committing to the 15th of October.
That's fine. I'll see what I can do, though, Adam.
I'll force myself.
Don't force yourself, because you've got to bear in mind that I might not do a podcast the following week. I probably will, though. We'll see how that
I'm happens. In London.
These are really good stories. I quite enjoy watching them.
Part of the one after that.
You're in London, eh? So, listeners, viewers, thank you for listening, watching, if indeed you did watch the show. Please come back, because we need you. Goodbye.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
Didn't I? It's still running.
Yes.
Yes.
Better catch it.
It's gone.
See, she laughs at my jokes.
She was burping.
No, I wasn't. I was actually laughing.
Oh,
sorry.
Good grief.
In a kind of tired way.
In a sort of strange sort of way, yes. Anyway, right, so next week then.
One thing we know is that Mary should be able to join us next week because Time Lord Expo has been cancelled.
Stop picking on her.
Oh, that's cruel.
You're so mean.
That is cruel.
I'm going to post that at the end of the episode now because I'm still recording.
Oh, yes.
And...
Goodbye, Doctor. The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production. Sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation. No copyright infringement intended.